This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to Breaking Bread, the show where we explore food through culture, conversations, and a lot of curiosity. I'm your host, Lo Yi-jun, a food writer and cook from the recipe blog junandtonic.com. On each episode of this show, we explore a particular dish, ingredient, or culinary story, and I bring in some food friends and experts to teach and excite us about food. On today's show, we have Debbie Teo in the studio with us to talk about gui. Welcome onto the show, Debbie.
Thank you, Jun.
Right, so Debbie's a chef that's actually super famous for her nyonya cooking, right? If I'm not mistaken, your dad is a baba from Malacca, and
yes.
your mom is a Penangite, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, that's two like strong nyonya cultures there. So it's like, we know your food is legit.
Okay.
And you've also held many talks promoting nyonya food all over the world and have written quite a few cookbooks about nyonya food and culture, right?
Yes.
But I thought like today, because nyonya food and nyonya cuisine is actually so large and expensive,
yeah.
It will take us like days of discussion.
Days and discussion, yes.
Yeah, right. Probably talk about it. So we'll just focus on one small sliver of nyonya cuisine, which is guis. And well, it's not that small, but it's something that I'm really, really obsessed about.
All right.
But yeah, let's just talk about gui. What really is the definition of a gui? You know, how do you define a gui for someone who probably hasn't had it before?
For us, living in Southeast Asia, or say Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, and all that, you know, Indonesia, kui represents dessert, sweet, something sweet. But kui can also be something savory, because you have the savory types of kui. And kui, it normally has coconut inside. It can be in the kui itself, or if it's not in the kui, then it's normally rolled outside.
Mm. But then, does that mean that if like for bingka ubi, right? There's no coconut in there, but then it is still a kui, right?
There's coconut milk inside.
Okay. So must it? Is coconut milk a defining, or coconut grated coconut a defining characteristic of kuis?
I wouldn't say that, because not all kuis has got coconut inside and outside.
Mm.
So it's more likely like a dessert, but we serve it the whole day. Can be breakfast, can be tea time, can be dinner for us, you know, here in Malaysia.
What are some of your favorite kuis?
Some of my favorite kuis. things like apom bok kwa that you can hardly find nowadays.
Oh, I've never heard of that. What is it?
It's actually like a pancake.
Yeah.
It's a fermented pancake with coconut water and coconut milk.
Oh.
Yeah, it's fermented and then it's made poured into a brass mold. Then you can see perforated bubbles coming out from the batter itself, and it's served with a coconut cream sauce.
Oh, like in the middle?
No, it's on the side.
Right?
It's dunked. So the sauce, we have two types of variety. One is banana based and the other one is durian based. So because you see Malaysia, we have different seasons, right? So when we make the kuih, when it's durian season, when there's abundance of durians, then the sauce will be tinged with durian pulp.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I've totally never seen that before in my
Actually, that is one of the dying kuis that I noticed.
Mm, what's it called again?
Apong bok kwa. It's actually apong ber kwa, the name.
Ah, okay.
But because, you know, we are Chinese dialects, or those in kampungs, they cannot speak Bahasa very well. So it became apong bok kwa, you know. So now the Peranakans call it apong bok kwa. But actually, it's not. Okay. There's no papaya inside, because when you say bokwa, it's like sounds like papaya, but there's no papaya inside. It's coconut milk, gula melaka, palm sugar, and a banana or durian.
Yeah, that brings me on to an interesting point, though, because you were saying how it's like a Peranakan or like nyonya butchering of the original name of the kui, and because like there's nyonya kui and then there's Malay kui,
yes.
Right? And are they quite different?
They're similar at the same time, different. Same, same, but then different.
What's the main difference between nyonya and Malay kuis?
Okay, because I've been doing research on kuis, I also do Malay kuis for features like Ramadan features and all that. So they have also the kuih kaswi. Kuih kaswi is actually just flour, sugar and air abu, which is lye water.
Ah, okay.
All right. The Malay version doesn't use so much mung bean flour. Mung bean flour gives you a bite-like texture. The Malay kuih version of the kuih kosui is just pure plain flour and sugar. Mm. That's it. And then steamed. And it's softer in texture. It doesn't give you that bite. But the pran, or I would say the Nyonya kuih, we have the mung bean flour added inside and more lye water added. So it gives you really that springy effect.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you think this mung bean is from, I guess, like the Chinese influence, right?
Chinese influence. Ah. The Chinese traders brought it in.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So actually, kuih is kind of like a, I guess, Malaysian or even like Southeast Asian thing,
yes.
right? And it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a lot of the modern kuihs that we see now, it's somewhat influenced by the Chinese immigrants who came over from China,
yes, definitely.
Like decades ago, right?
Yes.
Do you know what's the, I guess, original few kuihs that first came about?
I see very similar because I grew up eating kuihs all my life. So it's things like kuih bingka ubi kayu. During the olden days when my grandmother made them, even if you do not have an oven, what we did back home is that charcoal fire at the bottom and just use an Indian pot. You know the Indian pots that has got a pot and a cover base?
Ah, okay.
Simple. Very cheap, very simple. And you can put your charcoal at the bottom of the pot and then there's charcoal on top. And then you pour your kuih into the Indian pot lined with banana leaves.
Ah.
And that's so simple and you can make a kuih.
Right, then you heat it from like top,
top
and bottom.
Top and bottom. And the best part is when it's burnt at the sides.
Yeah.
That is my best, my part. I used to scrape that.
It's almost like, you know how Italians, they really like the burnt bits
yes.
of the lasagna?
Yes,
it's so the
same.
That's the Malaysian version.
So yeah, so it's like simple. Like that, and then you notice that the Malays also have the kuih bingka ubi kayu in their repertoire of kuihs.
Uh-huh.
So I noticed that those are the very old traditional kuihs that you find it in the Malay cuisine as well as the Peranakan cuisine.
Mm. But it's weird that outside of Southeast Asia, right, kuih isn't very popular, right? Even if you go to, I guess, Malaysian restaurants, right, you'll see like nasi lemak, maybe char kway teow, maybe even like laksas, but kuih isn't something that they would make. Why do you think that is, though?
Partly it's because of the coconut milk. The UHT-packed coconut milk.
Mm, it's very different from...
Yeah, it's very, very different from the fresh coconut milk. So if you follow a recipe from a cookbook, then you say, oh, it doesn't work. It's actually not it doesn't work. It's just that the coconut milk from the UHT versus the fresh milk is so much different.
Mm, then I guess like people probably tried it overseas and they're like, oh, this is... Not very nice.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why Malaysians like this so much.
Yeah.
But actually, the secret is in a fresh coconut milk.
Yeah. And kuih is also very tedious.
Right.
You have like 6 hours waiting time before you can cut a particular kuih. So, and you have only 24 hours before it turns bad.
Mm.
You can't refrigerate it. Kuih is so sensitive that you can't refrigerate. You refrigerate and then you steam it back. It's different texture. Texture, different taste, different feel.
And when you talk about cooking kuih, right, there was a... Do you remember that Gordon Ramsay episode where he came over to Malaysia and then he cooked for this, or like he was cooking rendang with this auntie, right?
Yes.
And then he was saying how, oh, in Malaysia we do a lot of like agak-agak cooking.
Yes.
And then he was just like so mind blown, like how do you not measure stuff? And that's the whole philosophy behind a lot of Nyonya cooking as well, right?
Yes.
And it applies to kuihs as well.
Yes.
Do you think that's very true that, I guess, a lot of the kuih recipes, there's no like real measurement in it. It's all done by feel, by texture.
Yes, especially kuih bingka ubi kayu. It's actually done by, even I've measured the amount.
It's different each time, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Why is that? Because of the...
Coconut milk. And
oh,
then
okay.
One, number coconut milk. Number two, the tapioca, the cassava itself.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes you get a younger version of it, which is has got more liquid, so you don't have to add so much liquid.
Mm-hmm.
You have an older tuber, so it's a bit dry. So you need to have more coconut milk. So you see that agak-agak comes in.
That's very hard for, I guess, non-Malaysians to approach kuih. Right?
Yes, yes. I myself find it difficult when I'm overseas because the coconut milk can drive me.
Are there any shortcuts you can take, I guess, for making kuih? Or does it have to be, I guess, the... You know, traditional, there's only one way of making it.
Kuih, there's no shortcuts to kuih.
Mm.
I've tried many ways of making it easier, simpler, but I have not found a way.
Do you
of...
have any disaster stories or like interesting experiments that you have tried?
Interesting, yeah. I've done kaya overseas before. Then the kaya doesn't come out as I would say glistening as what we have back here home, back home here. Uh-huh. And it's not as smooth as it is supposed to be. Mm. It'll be very grainy. It's not nice. It's the coconut milk. Simple as that, coconut milk. And then you have to use a processor to puree it to make it look nice. It's like, oh no, the color is like, no, no.
Yeah, I've tried it before. I've tried the pureeing method. Because when I make kaya, I feel like it's always like a 50-50. Like it could turn out really nice and smooth, but sometimes it'll get a bit lumpy.
Yes.
And then I'm like, I'll put it in the blender.
Yes.
But that seems like, you know, breaking tradition. And
yes, yes.
Breaking some Nyonya rules there.
Yes.
So I feel very bad about it every time I blend it. But it turns out okay.
Yeah, the taste is the same. Yeah. The taste is the same, but it's just the look of it.
Mm, yeah. Cool. Well, we're just going to take a quick break. I've been speaking to Debbie Teo on Kue. When we come back, I'm going to let her taste and critique some of the pulut tai tai I made and brought along. And Debbie will share a simple recipe for Kue. Stay tuned. You're listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Breaking Bread, the show where we go crazy about kueh. I'm Jun, and I've just been speaking to Debbie Teo, a renowned Nyonya chef, and we've been speaking about everything around kuehs. So, I actually brought some pulut tai tai here. In the studio with me, just for Debbie to taste and critique and tell me what I'm doing wrong. So, pulut tai tai is basically a kueh that's made of glutinous rice, right?
Right.
And then it's
yes.
coloured blue by butterfly pea flowers.
Yes.
And it's kind of like a marble effect, so it actually looks quite nice. So, this one here is my mum's recipe, actually.
It's gorgeous.
And usually, pulut tai tai, we have it with kaya, right?
Yes.
In Malaysia.
Yes.
Do you ever have it with, you know, the grated coconut with gula melaka?
Not really.
Oh, because that's what my mom really likes to do. Like,
oh, okay.
At home, she'll always make these two together.
All right, okay.
And I think growing up, I've just found, like, the combination, the textural differences. Yeah, it tastes really nice. Okay, you can try tasting it.
Oh, the kaya looks beautiful.
Oh, the kaya isn't that my me. I bought the kaya because, as I said before, kaya is like super temperamental when I
yes,
make it.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
yes. Kaya is the most, like, simplest but the most difficult.
Here you
okay,
go.
Thank you.
Okay.
So, how many hours did you steam it for?
Oh, I guess the process is like we will soak the glutinous rice. And then separate it into two piles, and
yes.
one of it we'll colour it blue,
yes.
and then we'll steam both together for 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll take it out and kind of mix them together to get the marbled effect, and then just press them tight and let it cool down before cutting into them. Does that sound like the right technique?
Yeah, that's the right way.
Okay.
Definitely. It's really very nice.
How do you tell what makes a good pulut tai tai?
Yeah. Okay. A good pulut tai tai has to be firm. It's not supposed to be too mushy.
Mm-hmm.
And the grains of the glutinous rice has to still be, you know, you can see whole grains.
Right.
If it's too soft, if you have over-soaked the glutinous rice and you make it into a pulut tai tai, then you can't see the grains. It'll be all like one mashed pancake.
Mm.
Not nice.
Is that like a common mistake that people always do? Like
yes.
Soak the rice for too long,
or I don't know what kind of grade of glutinous rice that they use. So that happens. Or sometimes they do not press it hard enough.
Right.
Then it's very loose. So that's not a pulut tai tai. These are the things that we look out for.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I have a confession. So we actually made two, right? So my mom made this one, and then I made another one, but I didn't press it enough.
Yes.
So it didn't taste as nice. The texture wasn't there.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So the texture has to be perfect.
Mm.
So it's so simple, but at the same time, you can make a lot of mistakes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm bringing it for Debbie. Okay, I'll take some of yours. I won't take mine.
And
then, won't be too embarrassing.
No, it's beautiful. And if you can put a bit of more salt in your rice, like, so you can get a contrast.
Mm.
Because the kaya is sweet, and then the glutinous rice, not salty, just a tinge.
Yeah.
It's all the nyonyas always have got that balance.
Mm, yeah, actually, I find coconut milk with salt brings out a lot of the flavour.
Yeah,
right?
You have to add. You have to add.
Try it with some of this grated coconut
mm-hmm.
with gula melaka. I know it's non-traditional, I guess, but I think it really works though.
It's fine.
Mm. Then you can scoop it with some.
Don't worry, I like to use my paws.
Okay, so you also brought your own kaya, right?
Yes, I did.
You want to tell us what what this special kaya is?
Okay.
It looks very different.
Yeah, this kaya is actually requested by a friend who's a cancer patient. She can't take sugar. So she requested for something no sugar, but she can take raw sugar, which is gula melaka. So I made the kaya with gula melaka, and I used pandan juice as well because I wanted the fragrance. But because of that, the color of it is like very dark brown and it looks like chocolate. Mm. But it still has that shimmering glow.
It looks like very shiny Nutella.
Yes. The taste test would be having it on bread and butter, then you will know the taste test. Mm. But I'm sure this will not be as sweet as the normal kaya. Mm. I followed my original recipe with 250 grams of sugar, but it's with 250 grams of gula melaka makes it not that sweet, I'm sure.
Mm. Can I try some of this?
Yes, please.
So this is the first time you're making this kaya, is it?
First time.
Oh, it's very sweet though.
It's sweet, right?
Yeah, it's really sweet.
Okay.
It's all from the gula melaka.
Yeah, all gula melaka. I showed you the pictures before.
And it's very fragrant.
Yeah.
You were also saying, remember something about first grade gula melaka, right?
Yeah.
What is that? It's so intriguing.
I also show all my students that comes from my classes what is the first grade gula melaka. First grade gula melaka, you can just use a knife and shave it lightly and you get shavings of gula melaka. And it actually melts in your hand. And when you put it into your mouth, it melts.
Mm.
And it's not that sweet. Yeah, of course it's sweet, but then it's not utterly sweet that it comes out, you know, really sweet.
So what's the difference in, I guess, like processing method between first grade and second grade?
First grade, they use pure palm extract. Mm-hmm. They don't add any sugar. There's some gula melaka that you go through the shops and you see all those in cylindrical shapes. It's so hard that even you use a knife and knock it, it's still hard like that.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be like that. That one has added sugar inside.
Right.
Okay. Added raw, added granulated sugar, I would say.
So I guess I've been using impure gula melaka all my life.
because actually pure gula melaka is very expensive. People, if you say, I buy it, I think I'm paying like $15, $16 per kilo, if I'm not sure.
Wow.
And there's no particular brand because these are all, I would say, small traders. So they make small batches. I'll just buy it from the wet market. So I don't have a particular, you know, store that I go to. I just see, I test it out. If it's good, then I'll just buy it.
And you can get it all over Malaysia?
So far, I've been buying mine from Malacca. But I'm sure the East Coast also have their own range of gula melaka, right. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Cool. That's really interesting. Okay, so I guess we'll just end with talking about like a recipe that you have for our budding home cooks out there.
Okay.
I should also mention Debbie also brought in kueh kosui.
Yeah,
kueh kosui with her. And she's going to, I guess, talk about the recipe and how she actually made this, right?
Yeah, this particular kueh kosui, actually I made into small teacups. And it's only 15 minutes of steaming time needed.
So it's very easy for, I guess, kueh virgins or like people who've never made kueh before, right?
Yes, it can be tricky, but, you know, because it's a small recipe, it makes like 20 pieces of this only.
Uh-huh.
So the recipe goes like 30 grams of tapioca flour, 70 grams of rice flour, 125 ml of pure pandan juice, where you mix it together with the flour earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Then sugar is 70 grams of sugar plus 250 ml of water. You boil to make it into a syrup. And the hot boiling syrup mix into the batter.
Mm.
So once you mix into the batter, you add 1/8 teaspoon of lye water.
Where do you get lye water?
You can buy it from any shop. Indian shops they have as well, or any grocery shops. They call it air abu. So you just add them up, heat up the teacups in your steamer. Once the steamer is hot, pour the liquid into your teacups. It has to be full. Then cover it. Do not touch the lid for 15 minutes.
Mm.
If you open it halfway, what's going to happen is that the kueh will not cook.
Oh, okay.
So this is using high steam, 15 minutes. Mm. And once it's done, 15 minutes, open up. Then you'll see the indentation in the center that makes it the test for kueh kosui. Or we call it wan ko kueh.
Ah, okay.
The Penang Knights call it wan ko kueh. Why wan ko kueh is...
It means like the cup,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, the cup itself. So this is a pandan version. You can make a gula melaka version. Up to you.
So this is one of the easier kueh.
Yeah, this is the one around. I would say the one of the easiest kuehs that, you know, you don't have to have much to do. Yeah, compared to others.
Cool. Well, I hope that encourages a few of you to test out this kueh recipe at home. But for Debbie, do you have any like hopes and dreams for the kuih industry or the kuih scene in Malaysia or even like Nyonya cuisine in general?
Yeah, actually I would say that, you know, this is our food. This is the food of our forefathers. I think the children nowadays, the younger generation, they should know what makes a kuih. People find that kuihs are expensive. They say, oh, so expensive. But they have no qualms paying for a muffin that's 5 ringgit. But a kuih that's 1 ringgit, 25 cents, they make a lot of noise. But do you know that there's a lot of work, labor being put behind a kuih? And kuih has only 24 hours of shelf life. And yeah, so I would like to have the younger generation, you know, get involved in kuih making, see how tedious it is. Then they appreciate. And because kuih itself has got so many meanings. Because if we talk, we have another session, I explain to you what are the kuehs that that is needed for a wedding and the significance behind each and every kuih.
Wow, so, I didn't know there was yes. like significance between different kuehs.
Yeah, wedding kuehs are only wedding kuehs. You can't say put another kuih and use it for wedding. It's a big no-no.
Oh, wow. Okay, that will require another whole session to talk about.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Debbie, for coming onto the show today.
Thank you, June, for having me.
I've had fun, had like plenty of things to taste, and yeah, thanks for opening my mind onto the wonderful world of kuih.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's episode of Breaking Bread. For more episodes, head to www.bfm.mine or find us on iTunes, Spotify, or on the BFM app. And if you're hungry for more food and recipes, visit junandtonic.com. That's JUNANDTONIC.com. I'm Jun, and you've been listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.